I think no matter what, I'm definitely farting on you tonight in bed.
Oh my God, you're disgusting.
That's happening. It's just what it happened. Like,
oh
we
my
know
God,
it's gonna
like,
happen.
Perfect match, like romance.
I mean, that is when it's real.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 446 for the week of February 12th, 2023. Nope. 13. I am Wet Bucket of Truth, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Nipple Check, Sarah D. Bunting.
Chicken's done.
Horny ex-panda, Tara Ariano.
I'm gonna find my perfect match.
And 98 Degrees member, Christina Tucker.
I'm hosting this and have no charisma.
Before we get into it, you should be hosting this, honestly.
Thank you. Thank you.
Seriously.
The people are clamoring.
They truly are. Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, she's a writer, podcaster, future host of Perfect Match. You've heard us here, heard her with us many times. It's Christina Tucker.
Welcome back, Christina.
We're here to talk about the aforementioned Perfect Match because ABC has built a romance show franchise around The Bachelor. TLC did it with 90 Day Fiancé. Now Netflix wants to do it with all of its weirdo reality shows. So it went to my chaos king and yours, Chris Colan, who created Married at First Sight and Love is Blind, among many others, to make a Love Island knockoff called Perfect Match. Singles who have already been on Netflix shows like The Circle, Too Hot to Handle, The Ultimatum, and Selling Tampa, a show, gather in a villa in Panama. At the end of one cocktail party, five men and five women have put themselves together as couples. From there, they must compete in compatibility challenges and fend off incursions into their true pure love from new people who are periodically brought in, all in the goal of being the show's ultimate perfect match. And the way you can tell they're there for the right reasons is there isn't even a cash prize. Okay? Four episodes dropped on February 14th. When else? Four more will drop on each of February 21st and 28th. Let's do the Chen check-in. Christina, should our listeners watch Perfect Match?
Look, if you like a reality dating show, this one is honestly more fun than some of the other Netflix ones we've been tossed. So I say go for it.
Mm-hmm. Sarah?
Yeah, if you liked or could tolerate X on the Beach on MTV, this is a show for you. It's basically Netflix's Challenge on the Beach. It's, mm-hmm. Yeah, watch it. Why not?
Dave.
No, but if you wish there was an Avenger-style team-up of all the Netflix reality dating shows, I guess this one's for you.
Yeah, I would mm-hmm. not say this is the show you should start with in this genre. Mm-hmm. I reviewed it for Vanity Fair, which we'll link in the comments, but I called it Battle of the Network Stars, but horny, and I stand by that. So if this is what you're looking for, yes. So let's get into it. Christina, Netflix rudely did not provide screeners to you. You had to get up early today to watch this thing. We're extremely grateful. On the surface, this show seems to be about compulsory heterosexuality, and yet both Carousel and Francesca identify as bisexual. How did you feel about this level of queer representation, or would you prefer that there be none?
Kind of both, okay. Almost, I think. I was like, I want a little more. I think it would have been a little more fun chaos if we had done a sort of bisexual genderqueer, queer energy in there. Mm-hmm. I also don't know that any of these people's brains could have handled that. That does, like, if we had opened up, like, anybody can match with anybody, I think we would have really lost it. I think they would have lost the plot. God bless them, but we're working with a limited means here. So mm-hmm. I'm fine with what we have here. This seems about right for these folks.
What was that MTV show?
Are You the One?
Are You the One?
Are You the One?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which was chaotic and very fun. But I don't know about these guys. We're talking about like rejects from Too Hot to Handle. Like, I don't know.
It's funny to think that MTV is the highbrow version of what's going on in Netflix's dating reality
culture.
Realm.
So the reason that the show has the zip that it does, even if you don't follow any of them on social media, is that you know that they all have complex interactions outside of filming. And so, Sarah, you already mentioned the challenge. As a fan of that show, were you drawn into this ecosystem in the same way?
Kind of, because with the challenge and with X on the Beach, which is basically like a like bachelor pad style remix of mm-hmm. like Are You the One, various challenge people are doing various gender fuck things, which is great. Sure. But like this perfect match, like lifts the aspect of let's drop other people in midway through the season. So it's hopelessly confusing. And whatever strategy there is impossible to follow. That's straight out of X on the Beach. But all of those shows are very direct about the fact that like appearing on shows like this is the cast's job.
Right.
This is a cast. There is an ecosystem. It's a basically like bartender bonehead cinematic universe. And they're all fairly open about that. And I respect that. So I like the show more because it's not trying to be anything grand or romantic or disingenuous about anything that's going on. They're like, we're here to be hot and stupid and get in fights and fall downstairs drunk. I mean, what's not to love and a question mark, but it's just a little less, I don't know, self-satisfied about romance and a little more direct. And I like that about X on the Beach and this. And there are some fun people and they're half naked all the time. And I like looking at them also, but that aspect of the challenge and the fact that they fold like Insta DM fights and hookups into the stuff that you're seeing on screen in a way that makes it more compelling and not harder to follow, like it is on The Housewives, for instance. I like that too. I think it's well built to sort of be with a foot in both worlds, but also very simple and easy to follow. So you could just have it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what for me really worked was the fact that they all kind of have some history, like they all know of each other. There's like there's like some oh, we slept together a couple times. Oh, we dated. And I think that kind of enriches the text. Listen to me, like I'm in a damn English seminar over here. What is wrong with me? But I do think that adds like a fun extra shading of not, I wouldn't say depth because it's certainly not depth, but it is like an extra little bit of character enrichment to be like, oh yeah, I slept with this guy for a bit. Like, I guess he's going to be my match, but like, is that really going to work? What about all these other guys? And then there's always like the threat of like, we could bring in this guy who has this troubling history with this one. And like, I think that's kind of a fun addition as opposed to like, we have to get to know everybody all at once. Like they're kind of coming in a little, like a level ahead already, which is fun.
Yeah. One of the initial cast of 10 is Shane from Love is Blind season 2. And I feel like even people who didn't watch that season know of him because he was so memed on Twitter. And yes. I had to hunt up the original tweet that I thought was so funny. A Twitter user named Mom AC Saigoren, who has since locked their account, but it was repeated everywhere, tweeted, every shot of Shane in Love is Blind looks like he's trying to hide the fact that he's actively transforming into a werewolf. And it's something I never forgot because it's true. I mean, there is virtually never a shot of him where he is not completely bugging out his eyes. And he is so, I mean, it's hard to say who's the dumbest person in this cast. I sure don't want is. To and I won't, but he's in the conversation, I think. What did other people think of Shane? Let's go to Dave, who had no contact with Shane ever before.
Is Shane the one that kind of looks like Scott Kahn? Kind of? He's got that jaw.
Sure.
He's like if a Kahn and a Nolte did something together.
Yeah, I was going more Nolte for him, I think. More, no doubt.
With some Busey in there as well.
Yeah.
Busey, that's who I
Busey,
wanted. Yep.
Busey.
I mean, not wanted, certainly, but you know what I mean.
Cocaine energy.
Yeah.
They all do a lot of dumb things in the show by necessity, but also some of them are dumb. But there's also different levels and types of dumb in the show. You know, like there's emotional and the lack of emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. There is just like, I don't know what candy is, like that kind of thing, you know? Like that said, this guy seems particularly dumb. Like the kind of dumb that I experienced a couple of days ago when Tara said, what is this doing in the cupboard? And it was a bottle of Kraft Light Ranch dressing that I just put in the plates cupboard a day before for some reason, because I'm going into my got to go to the store to buy another carton of milk. There's 12 cartons of milk in the fridge phase of my life, I guess. I don't remember putting it in there. I remember using it. Mm-hmm. Why is it in there? I don't know. Mm. It was a very Shane moment, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, he's just trying to get lifts and gains with his ranch dressing, I guess.
Yeah, he later we find out one of his secret shames is his calves. He feels very insecure about his calves because there's a discussion where the guys are talking about like what cosmetic interventions they might consider having, which I also thought was very instructive. Like this show and F-Boy Island, which is another classic of the genre, RIP, no longer streaming on HBO Max, tragically. But like it's such a it's a window into a whole segment of the population that I won't say none of us, but I certainly will never interact with in person where it's like, this is this, as Sarah said, this is your job. Being hot is your job. When you're not being hot on a show, you're being hot on your Instagram because you're trying to get a flat tummy tea sponsorship or something. and then you watch a show like this and you're like, this is why these people get to whatever level they are at. And what that level is, again, I won't say what it is. No one can. But then there's someone like Inez, who is a French person from the nation of France.
Heard of it?
Yeah. Should she have her citizenship revoked for being on this show, or should participation immediately confer American citizenship? Christina.
I will say, when I was watching, my housemate came up to talk to me and, of course, was immediately sucked in. And it went very quickly from, like, I have a quick question to, like, oh, I can answer a couple emails, like, sitting on the floor of your office. And I was like, okay, I see what's happening to you. She immediately, upon hearing Inez, was like, is that a real French person? Is that a real French accent? Is she making this up? And I was like, no, she's... That's what French people sound like. This is for real. She's real. She was just very shocked that this is like this. Otherwise, like she seems on the of the scale of, you know, we've got the what kind of dumb are you to like what kind of how high could you be? She seems on the higher end of the dumb, at least emotionally intelligent. I think she has a little bit more of that than certainly Shane does.
Sure.
And I think one of my favorite things about that conversation of bros was watching Dom, who is also an absolute himbo. And I must confess, though it will make me sound like a teenager, a person I know from TikTok.
Oh!
yes, indeed. Who is... clearly more emotionally intelligent, but also equally dumb, which is just so fascinating to watch him be like, you guys really just talking about calves right now? Like, for real? Is this like a joke? Like, he felt as confused as I did, which I thought was very funny because I was like, well, I'm not on this show, but you're right there. Yes.
Speaking of smarts and dumbs, though, I love that Nick is framed for us as some kind of a genius just because he went to MIT, like as if dumb people don't get into all of the colleges all the time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That one, I was like leaning back in my chair. Such a close talker.
Two seconds of him, and I was like, "Oh, I know exactly what kind of guy this is," and I am exhausted. Like, honestly, give me Shane instead.
Yeah,
at least Shane is exactly what he presents to be. Mm-hmm.
The MIT guy is test tube failure Rob Delaney from Catastrophe.
Yes.
Yeah, the close talking was, that was something I noted as well, because you know this is a move that he does in clubs where it's loud and it's like, you're in a perfectly silent, they can't even play music at a low volume for taping reasons. Like, be normal. Stop doing this muscle memory of how to hit on a lady.
Yeah, I like to think he goes to the kitchen and he gets himself some yogurt from the fridge and he walks up to somebody. He's right up in their face. Like, did you want the fruit on the bottom one or do you want the one that's separate?
God.
A true joy of these first four episodes was there's sort of a bit of a decathlon in episode three. And one of the challenges is they are presented with a blank map and they have to bid on how many countries they could label.
No, I got to give props.
Not high.
To my bisexual chaos villain, Francesca, because she pulled out many more than I thought she was going to.
Yeah.
By the skin of her teeth, you might say.
Oh, yes. Well, let's talk about Francesca because she definitely is one of the more magnetic figures in the house, I think. Christina, you brought her up. Speak on that.
Yeah. I mean, she gets, you know, she's the first intro. She comes in. She's like, look, I'm hot. I know that I'm hot. It's so fun for me to be this hot. And I'm very excited to see what happens as men throw themselves at me, which is interesting considering that she is instantly paired with Dom and they have kind of, of everyone on this show, I think aside from Joey and Carousel, and at some point we'll get into the spelling of Carousel's name and the pronunciation, because it something may add up there. But aside, I think those two are coming out as like the couples, to the point where like if someone else speaks to Dom, Francesca is like, how dare you? You are a slattern who is about to ruin my life and relationship that has been checks calendar 2 days long, perhaps. So like very strange energy. And she does kind of immediately go for the jugular in a way that I'm like, oh, there's going to be a late season. I know there's going to be a late season turn. And I do. I'm like worried about Dom. I don't think his heart's safe there. And I think it's already a little too far placed into her hands. And I think those black and white talons are going to crush it.
Oh, yeah, it's true. I mean, when she comes in that first outfit where it's like, it's got the thong straps like built into the dress, it's like, again, this is a world I will never be in. Where do you even shop for that outfit? I know it's ASOS or whatever, but like, never.
Fashion Nova, probably.
Uh-huh. Probably. I will never see a person wearing that in my real life anywhere. And I'm like, that's part of the fascination to me too. Like all of the dresses that have like under boob as a feature.
Very strap heavy costuming happening in a way that I'm like, do you have one shirt that's a full shirt? No? Okay.
Do you think there's an R&D department somewhere at Netflix or one of the big producers of reality, maybe in MTV, that they're like, we gotta figure out transparent audio equipment belt technology ASAP, because it's really ruining our fashion lines.
Watching those mics fight for their lives, just fighting for their lives, connected to those bikinis,
the
tiny shorts. I was like, we have got to be better than this. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, there's got to be like a patch, like a nicotine patch that you can just stick on your shoulder or something.
Boom mic drones.
Yes.
Yeah.
Boom mic drones.
Like, hello, NFL Films technology. Just like put a wire across and send the thing zooming down into the huddle.
I think my other favorite villain, if we're talking villains, Chase. Wow. That is, and as a black woman can say this, that man is a light-skinned menace, and he needs to be taken away from society. He is too tall. He's too light-skinned. His eyes are too light. He is not to be trusted. I just need listeners to understand this, that there is a type of light-skinned man that does this, and you cannot ever trust them. It is my political platform. It is why I have to fight Kenya Barris. It can't be trusted.
Also, when did Derek Jeter and Pauly D have a child?
Because God, that's exactly it. His
fucking
face.
Uncanny, and he's the same kind of fuckboy that Pauly D is too, and that allegedly Derek Jeter, new Fox sports analyst, used to be like, but then at the same time, he is absolutely so perfect. He could have been grown in a lab for this kind of show. And poor Carousel, my Jersey girl, my heart, just has no chance.
So they go on
against
a date.
The chaseosity of it all.
Yes, she is sent on a date with him. He is a later addition. He is like twice as tall and twice as wide as she is as well. And then at a certain point, when they're on this like fake date, which all of them are just like, let's go to a beach and have three pieces of fruit and 700 glasses of wine. but she like at a certain point asks him like, what's my name? And he says Constantine. Like, you're
he
close.
Also tells her he likes her teeth.
Yeah, yep. That's the first compliment he gives her. I love your teeth.
It's like the AI is breaking down. Doesn't know what to do. Uh-oh.
Daisy.
The boldness of him to come in and say the same thing to every single girl as he like systematically worked his way. I was like, bro, you have to know. Change it up a little bit. Yeah. Just not a ton. I'm not asking for the world here. I can see you're not capable. But you can say, I saw you when I first walked in and you were the most beautiful girl in the house to every single one of them.
I like the fact that I sometimes can't tell if these are people from Perfect Match or perhaps a character from an Austin Powers movie, you know, like it would be a good BuzzFeed quiz.
Yeah. But yes, Carousel with a K and no O.
When I saw her, you know, Chiron come up and I looked at it and I said, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that. And then she said her name and I said, that would never have come to my mind.
And it's Jersey style. So it's not carousel, it's carousel.
Yeah.
I do love whenever she gets mad and starts yelling and that jersey leaps out. Mm-hmm. Just kiss. What a legend.
She had the most moments of true clarity out of everybody there, though. Like, they didn't last, and she fell back into whatever trap that she's been falling into for all these shows.
Yeah.
You know, just giving herself up to the production. But there are moments in the first episode where she, like, talks like a normal person, says normal things,
yes,
evaluates the situation that she's in correctly.
Yes.
Yep.
And then goes to bed with whoever.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
just gives up.
Yeah.
I relatable.
Yeah, she has that whole, after that first challenge, she had that whole conversation with Francesca, and she was like, that was kind of weird. It kind of felt like he was slut-shaming me, and like, why isn't he over his ex? And then everyone was like, yep, good talk. Anyway, so I'll be obviously matching with him again tonight. I think we all saw that coming. Girl, yes, come on now.
I also want to give a shout out to the editors who, anytime anyone abandons a cup in the pool, make sure there is a shot of it floating by, because all of these people are animals. Like, whenever someone has to go to a room with a new person, like, it's clear there is no service happening in between. No one is changing the sheets. No one is even making the bed. Like, every room, you can just imagine what it smells like. Mm-hmm. Horrible.
Obviously, this isn't for me, but when they rematched and went into the same dirty rooms, I was like, and that would be my final.
Exactly.
So I would have to go. Like, absolutely not.
Like, we can do this on the roof if you want, but we're not.
This can't happen.
Not without tongs and a flea bomb.
You ever go to somebody's house and they don't pay attention to the cleaning details, and you walk into the bathroom and there's just nondescript little things of greasy hair in every corner? That's what I imagine this house is like. It's just like, oh, come on. Like, you gotta get in there. You gotta get in there with the sponge and or the scrubber and just clear that out. I think the whole house is gonna be like that by episode two, probably.
Yeah.
But speaking about the editors,
they gotta fumigate it.
And production. I do have one, like, just little thought experiment or something to ponder. But in episode one, the challenge, you know, like the actual game they play is just true or false with water buckets on the beach. And if you answer incorrectly, you get dunked, or rather the water falls on you because you have to pull the string of, what was it? It was like true and something.
Something in, or cap.
It was cap. I didn't understand. The show's like, I didn't know what that was either. And I'm like waiting for the explanation and it never happened. And I'm like, well, fuck.
I guess I'm old. They're like, again, sorry, middle-agers.
Yeah. Cap is short for something.
Fact or cap. I don't know. I'll
fact
look it up.
Or cap.
Uh-huh. Nobody
knows.
I
don't either. I'm old.
I mean, it's like, I could I use it correctly in a sentence? Uh-huh. Yes. Could I define it? Perhaps no.
It just means lie.
I think it's just bullshit.
Yeah.
According to USA Today, saying no cap means you aren't lying. Thank you, USA Today, for putting this
I'm searching for a deeper origin than there is, I guess.
Yeah, okay, I don't think there is one. I think so that, no cap.
So that game, just think about it. So they ask three questions to the men, three questions to the women each. Six questions. Every time they answer, they do a round of questions. They have to, like, shepherd everybody off the beach, have them turn around, have production come up with hoses or other buckets of seawater, whatever they're doing, fill the buckets up, that must have taken hours just for six fucking questions.
Yeah.
It was such an ill-conceived, like, production game. I bet they did it. Like, oh shit, we didn't think of this.
Yeah.
Like, we just turned an hour thing into 4 hours, I am sure. This is one of the things I'm like,
I didn't even think of that.
On the challenge, at least they're smart enough to position the contestants above the water. And then after enough wrong answers, they just shove you into whatever
you into it.
Corner of the
Baltic.
Well,
then we got the very low tech, you know, just how many chilies can you eat? So that was, you know,
yes,
production's day off. They were like, I don't know, eat them.
Notable, they were much more confident about how many chilies they could eat than about how many countries they could label. And they were wrong.
Wait, hang on.
They were equally wrong on both.
Yeah.
So this is obviously in an episode that's after one.
This is episode three.
Okay. So the challenge, the romantic challenge, or the compatibility challenge here was how many chilies you can eat.
Yeah.
And what was the thinking behind what does that accomplish according to the show's production?
Well, I think in the logic of the
show. Will you still love somebody if they massively shit the bed tonight?
They have diarrhea that turns them inside out. No, it was like, how, are you united? Will you both do this thing together? And can you outbid another team? Yes.
Okay.
It was, as far as the challenges go, that one, I was like, this is a little convoluted and extra.
Yes. Which is why there's one in a later episode where they're just like, arrange yourselves in from most to least compatible. And then they do it. And then they're like, well, that's the challenge. Bye. Like, that's all there is to it. Which I thought was like, someone got tired that day. They didn't want to put anything together.
What do you think Nick Lachey thinks about being grandpa on the set?
Well, okay, so I had, Forgotten America's Dad written in question. Yeah. Like, what? His energy is so perplexing. Like, sometimes he comes in and he's like, hey, guys, what's up? And then, like, the next time they cut to him, he's like, all right, so how was your kiss? I'm like, what's going on with you levels-wise, my guy?
Mm-hmm. He hosts a lot of these Chris Colan shows. He's a host on Love is Blind and The Ultimatum. Both of those, though, with his wife, Vanessa Lachey. And she is absent here, and I would love to know why. Like, if they were like, we barely need one Nick, we certainly don't need to pay two of you. Or if she was like, this is too disgusting and down market for me, and I will not do it. I suspect probably the former.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really do a ton.
No.
Aside from, like, show up every now and then, explain a confusing challenge, and then introduce them to the boardroom or whatever. Mm-hmm. The executive board. I forget what that...
The boardroom, yeah.
Yeah, why is it a boardroom?
Because it's got a board.
Why?
Because that's where power rests, my friend.
Oh, yes. Great. That
it's
too.
The seat of power.
Is it like a game board room? Is that the...
Yes.
Who cares? Sure. Doesn't matter. I still like the show. I just think there are things they don't need.
It was also like the set design was from something else entirely different.
Yeah, the set design was very circle-esque and very, just a total 180 from the rest of the show. It's also, I gotta say it, like, we're in Panama? Why?
I don't know. I forget which episode it even was where they said it. But yes, yeah. I took note.
Because I remember watching the first couple episodes and being like, oh, maybe I missed when they said, like, and here we are in gorgeous blank. Because I was like, these are just nondescript beach shots, but this beach looks kind of sad. Like, where are mm-hmm. we? Interesting.
They're wherever they can afford to get a villa like that, which is, you know, yeah. You would think they could get it cheap now that F-Boy Island isn't using theirs. But yeah, what a show. I'm sorry that we made you addicted to it, Christina, I guess.
Yeah, I am a little upset that I was like, these are hour-long too. Like, damn, I really got to put in some work. It's fine. It's for the best.
Okay, it's time to go around the dial talking about something we've been watching on TV lately. First stop is Wiktar.
Well, I watched another Netflix show as well that premiered last Thursday. You, season 4, or should I say the first half of season 4, since the way you can tell Netflix now regards you as a marquee title is that they split the season in half. The last 5 episodes will be out next month. But season 1 had Joe, who's played by Penn Badgley, anthropologically assessing the rich dicks of New York City whilst also stalking the object of his desire and murdering anyone who got in his way. Season 2, same thing in Los Angeles, or so he thought. Turned out there was more to the story. Season 3, he and his lady move to a fancy Silicon Valley suburb and do a lot of social commentary on that.
This is like Top Chef.
Yeah.
Where can we shore up our ratings? Let's move to the show there.
Well.
Season 5, Chicago.
This season, they're in Europe. They start in Paris and then he goes to England. So he's followed Marianne, who's played by Tati Gabrielle, who was his newest crush at the end of season 3. To Paris. In the first episode, we learn what brought him from there to London. He's got a new identity, including fake academic credentials and a job teaching English at a university. And he's trying to be a new person, which means trying to avoid Matt, the fellow prof who lent him the apartment that he's living in. But after Joe rescues Matt's girlfriend, Kate, Charlotte Ritchie from Call the Midwife and UK Ghosts, but most importantly, Taskmaster, he gets invited out to meet Matt's circle of rich dickhead friends. And he gets way too drunk. When he wakes up the next day, he finds one of said rich dickheads stabbed dead in his apartment. And then it's on. And every season his narration is addressed to you, which is always like the lady that he's obsessed with. And this time the you is who the real killer is, who is in this cat and mouse game with him. So The writing in the first episode is a little more clumsily expository than it has been in other seasons, maybe just because producers aren't sure that Americans get the nuances of the British upper classes. But as Joe starts to get a clearer picture of what's happened with this murder, there's a meta-narrative about him being in a whodunit, which is a genre he doesn't respect and is bitter about, which is sort of cute, too. So far, it's delivering everything you want out of the show. Charlotte Ritchie is particularly good playing Kate as an absolutely unapologetic bitch, which is funny given everything else I've seen her in, especially Taskmaster, where she was like a sweet goof. I did spend most of the first episode waiting for them to explain what Joe's doing with the baby that he had in season three, and finally had to go back and read the season three finale recap on Decider, which was written by someone named Tara Ariano. I did not remember he had left the baby on a trusted neighbor's doorstep because it was in 2021. I'm a different person now. Anyway. Mm-hmm. My biggest issues with this season so far are completely shallow. Number one, Joe Incognito has longer hair and a beard, and I don't appreciate not being able to see the cheekbones in full effect. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Number two, I was pre-mad when there was a bunch of headlines last week about where he said on his podcast, which I will never listen to, that he told the producers on You he didn't want to do sex scenes anymore out of respect for his wife. But there totally are sex scenes in at least the first half of the season. So if that was going to keep you away, don't worry. He still gets it in. Speaking of getting it in, no, not at all. I already mentioned my Perfect Match review, and I also, for Vanity Fair, wrote a quasi-eulogy about Arrested Development getting booted off Netflix next month, and that's at Vanity Fair as well, and we'll link it in the show notes.
All right, Christina, what have you been watching lately?
It has been many years, and I have never been a person who really glommed onto reality, a competition I love. Something happened to me, folks, in 2023. Was it a group of friends kind of hungover on New Year's Day popping on The Real Housewives of Potomac? It sure
was. Oh, down she goes.
Those beige women have changed my life in a way that I was not ready for emotionally. I think part of the thing that kept me from Potomac specifically was that I was like, no, like, I'm not ready to engage with so many light-skinned women at once. That could be so scary. And it is pretty scary. But it is so, so funny. And I, now that this has happened to our household, we've all picked our own, like, franchises. I have taken on Beverly Hills from the start. Right. I am currently mad about things that happened to Lisa Vanderpump 10 years ago. I'm living in a wildly different reality. Sometimes I will be watching Beverly Hills upstairs. I'll go downstairs. New York is happening. What's going on with the Countess? Who can say? Is it cabaret time? It absolutely is.
Oh, gorgeous.
I find all of them thrilling in their own separate ways. But I think the thing that really clicked us in with Potomac is how funny they are, and funny on purpose and not funny in the way that like Sonia is funny on New York because she says things that make no sense and lives in a Grey Gardens hell house. Like, that is funny, but sad. These women are purposely making jokes in their testimonials and talking heads in a way, and to each other. In a way that I really, really appreciate. I think for me, the moment that really cemented this was seeing a mime approach Giselle and Karen as they were sitting outside arguing about their marriages and or taxes. It's tough to say. And a mime just walked up to invite them to a trip to the south of France. And Karen said, oh, hell no. I don't want to look at this. And I just think that that is what art it can look like. Just two women yelling at a random mime on the street who's actually inviting them to a trip to the south of France for another one of their castmates.
How long did that take? How long does it take a mime to invite somebody to the south of France?
It took a really long time, mostly because the two of them were like genuinely confused and thought he just wanted airtime on the show. So there's also like a slight bit of fourth wall breaking, which is always thrilling whenever we get a little bit of fourth wall breaking. But they're both just like, no, ignore it, ignore it. And then he has to like hand them the, I don't know, graved invitation or whatever. I'm a housewife's head now. This is who I am. I do have a trick for viewers. If you are watching a season, like I'm watching Beverly Hills season 6 right now, it's pretty dark. Does Yolanda have Lyme or Munchausen? It's not fun. What you got to do? You watch the first ep, maybe the first two if you're feeling crazy. You hop to the trip. If there's another trip, you hop to that trip and then you watch the last two episodes. That's basically all you need. They will give you every recap in every moment of every episode. Yeah.
You can actually just watch the reunions, I find, at least for New Jersey.
I have a really hard time with the reunions, weirdly. I find them boring and kind of annoying. And I'm just like, if it's a really juicy season, I'll watch a reunion. But otherwise, I'm like, I get it. You're yelling about other stuff. And we'll revisit it 800 times in the premiere of the new season, because this is where all of the juice is going to come from. So fine.
Yeah.
Fine. So this is who I am. I'm a housewife's head now. For any plugs for me, I'm just kind of bopping around the internet. You can find me at C_GraceT on Twitter when I remember that Twitter is a thing that allegedly exists and not a dying, failing platform that I have troublingly built most of my life and career upon. But that's fine. And you can, of course, listen to my auto straddle podcast, Wait, Is This a Date? All about the queer disease of not knowing if you're on a date or hanging out with a friend and just trying to get everybody to talk to one another.
Sounds like you need a mime in your life.
That could be the solution. More mimes. Mm-hmm. Wow, a sentence I never thought I'd say.
I am finally watching The Good Fight. I am way behind on this because I was a watcher sort of like on time when it came out. And then the last two seasons just... it was not happening for who knows why. So I just sat down with season 5, the second to last season, last week, which means that I'm currently wading through the Orwellian Mandy Patinkin Judge Wagner arc. Mm-hmm. And a lot of self-satisfied sort of semi-post-pandemic takes on, quote, cancel culture, and cutesy one-liners about how, quote, microaggressions are like Pringles. But at least the show tries these things. Certainly, if you can't with the like progressive wish fulfillment parts of it, you can just mute it because everyone is just beautiful to look at. Everyone's fashion and makeup is very watchable. I've always appreciated that the show lets middle-aged and old folks care about fucking and lipstick in that order. So I appreciate that. And then when Elaine May shows up as RBG, it's like, you just have to let the show have that one and kind of all the other ones like it, because it's not like you didn't know that this is what the show is. Plus, when it is tackling a capital I issue, even when you get that whiff of Sorkin-y public service self-righteousness, it's so much better than what you usually get. And specifically, I'm talking about Law & Order SVU, which tries to have it both ways to be copaganda that's also amplifying survivors and expecting a parade. The Good Fight is not perfect, but there's something else quite like it in terms of taking these nutty what-if scenarios and just spinning them out until the end. It is kind of pulling back from the CPD lawsuit / murdered cop storyline in a way that I understand why they didn't want to go all the way there, while also wishing they had had more courage with it, because what other show is going to go all the way there? I'm also wondering who the actor Andy Carl pissed off in the casting world that he keeps getting cast in these fairly high profile gigs as detectives who then get killed. Hi again, SVU. But overall, it's such a watchable, weird show in unique ways that mostly it has earned. Speaking of Pringles, I'm trying to ration the episodes because soon there won't be any more, but it is difficult.
The Good Fight seems like a show, and I'm asking this in earnest, that probably had a mime storyline at some point. Can anybody confirm? Yeah,
probably.
All right.
Yeah, it like could. It, if it did, I would have believed it, which is funny because I am rewatching currently with a with my housemate who has never seen it. So we're in like season 2 and I'm just like, oh, right.
Oh, okay.
This show, they were just doing whatever the hell is going off.
I still love it. And Christine Baranski's Bob is still goals.
Gorgeous.
Now and forever. Gorgeous. This is not related, so there is no segue. I'll just jump to for my plug. I have a bookstore. It is all true crime all the time. It is Exhibit B Books, and you can find it at exhibitbbooks.com. as you're listening to this, if you listen the day it comes out, we're still in our quote Valentine's sale phase. So anything hashtag just get a divorce, which seriously is like a quarter of the store, is 14% off, as are Amours Fou and Cons and Frauds. And then paperbacks are going on sale in a week or two. So get on the mailing list and be the first to find out when stuff is on sale, because something always is. ExhibitBbooks.com.
All right. I have a very old, well, not very old, a somewhat old show I want to bring back to celebrate a great moment in Foley work. Sarah D. Bunting, I'm encouraging you to take off your headphones for the next minute or so. You've been warned. I'm serious. You might want to take off your headphones.
Okay. Bye.
This is one of the best Foley barfs I've heard in my life. When you hear it, you have to imagine an old, jowly, white capitalist pig type of character personified as Barf Foley, and it's exactly what they did. Here's the clip.
Tony, are you all right?
Oh, Christ.
That is the in-betweeners. That is the in-betweeners. Yeah, you can come back on, Sarah. That was the in-betweeners, Simon having a difficult moment at a party after drinking a bit. But that was so gushy and jowly in his audio that I laughed so hard at just really the sound effect. is this bothering you just the description of it? that I just wanted to share it with everybody.
Gushy wasn't great.
Whether you wanted it or not. All right, that's
not.
It. It's like the polar opposite of a mime storyline. It's like silence or like everything. You get one or the other.
That's true.
We have to average it out. On the next Extra Extra Hot Great coming this Friday, it is a great one. It is Sarah Makes Everyone Watch Leonard Nimoy as Sherlock Holmes. You're like, what? When did that happen? Well, we'll let you know. It happened only in Kentucky, and that's all we're going to give you right now. That is available to all supporters at any level. Please visit extrahotgrate.com/club for all your joining needs. And then right here on the next EHG Prime, it is The Company You Keep with returning guest Crystal Farmer. Don't miss that one.
I have a tiny triumph. I'm claiming it. Many, many years ago, possibly in the first year of Mark II of Extra Hot Great, because we were certainly still living in Los Angeles at the time, I believe Sarah had us do a topic for an Extra Hot Great mini, which was something we had at the time.
Oh.
Suggest where she asked which short stories we thought would make good series or limited series. And I had suggested George Saunders' The Semplica Girl Diaries, and it's becoming a movie. Richard Ayoade from the IT Crowd and Garth Marenghi's Dark Place is directing it. Ben Stiller apparently is going to be in it. He's everywhere all of a sudden. Guys decided he likes to act again.
Ben is back.
Ben is back. All exactly. Ben is back. Remembered this somehow, this topic I came up with 10 years ago, probably. Dave said it was a tiny triumph, and so I'm going to take it. Congratulations to me.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon user submission this week. Let's hear it.
Hi there, this is Laura, and today I'm pitching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Season 15, Episode 1, entitled 2020, A Year in Review, for inclusion in the EHG canon. In this episode, the gang is in front of some type of IRS loan collector who's here to justify the reason why PPP loans were taken, how they were used, and to collect on repayment. The format of the episode is familiar. It's something the viewer is used to seeing. The gang is in front of some type of authority figure, and they're trying to justify actions that they've taken, and most of the story is told in flashback clips. The first loan was taken out so that Dennis and Mac could dress in full tactical gear and stand outside polling locations to provide appropriate voting security. Anyway, their actions end up leading one thing to another until they end up being entirely responsible for the vote count delay. Frank claims to have run an import-export business, the story of which gives us a Scorsese-style view into his underground salon for like-minded older men who all wear their masks on their chin. And when his Chinese oil-based hair dye ends up dripping down his highest-profile client's face, Rudy Giuliani, during an infamous press conference, everything goes downhill for that import-export business. Now, before I get on to the third and probably my favorite business, I want to pause and point out the absolute density of the story and the jokes up until this point. It's impossible for me to clip all of the funny things said in these because I would just be playing a 30-minute clip. It's the amount of jokes in this episode that lend itself to rewatching. The first time I watched, the Rudy Giuliani reveal gave me a laugh-out-loud gut laugh. But upon rewatching, I'm laughing harder at Frank saying he's cutting corners because he switched to American oil. So, on to the third business, Varmints and Garments. Here, Charlie and Dee go into business making masks. Set up here in clip one.
Stop COVID! We don't need any more of those kind of masks. Everybody's making those masks.
Well, they're trying, right? But see, my angle is mine are funny. Look at this. Fouch the Grouch, right?
That's a great name. Who is that? Fouch.
Okay, how about this one? Mama needs wine, right? And this is funny because women are alcoholics who hate their kids.
Yeah.
And no business would be complete without a commercial. Here in clip two.
Sweetie, if you're not going to help me homeschool these kids, can you please at least do the dishes? I need to drink wine.
I know you do. But honey, I got you a gift.
You did? What?
A custom-made mask.
Are you looking to party this Halloween? Are you sick of being jerked around by the fat cats in the Halloween industry? Then we've got the fix for you, Garments and Varmints!
I really have to point out that the mask in this commercial was printed with the phrase bitch muffler on it. The first time I watched this, I died laughing at the reveal that Dee and Charlie outfitted the January 6th rioters. But rewatching, I love to watch just the rising irritation between two people who've just been bubbling together. One day, we'll all be able to say, yeah, if you weren't in 2020, you won't get it. So to me, this episode is canon worthy based on the story and joke density alone. But wait, there's more. Early on in the episode, Mac reveals his politics. Here in clip three.
You know, we were concerned that our guy wasn't going to get a fair shot in the election.
Of course not, because he's an outsider that brings a fresh perspective to Washington, right?
Right.
I mean, not everybody likes him, but that's why we do.
Yeah, and we were really worried that the mainstream media just wasn't taking him seriously.
It's like, do I want a bunch of eggheads who spend all day learning about shit, influencing how I think about things? No. Yeah,
no. Plus, you want a guy who's lived a little, right? You want a guy who knows how to party.
Our guy knows how to party, right? Our guy parties.
Now, getting political isn't something that's odd or new for It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but usually the writers take both sides of an issue and kind of lampoon both sides to show how ridiculous they are. But throughout this entire episode, each member just keeps expressing similar sentiments. And the viewer starts to realize that this one's not balanced. They're all on the same side, and they feel strongly about it. And then because you are taken back to a place of 2020, and no matter what side you are on, you have strong feelings about them all being aligned strongly on one side. And it's at this point that the writers play the biggest joke on you, here in clip four.
That's American, right, and maybe if our guy had won, our businesses could succeed just like his.
They would have been a huge hit.
None of these idiotic businesses would have been successful whether Trump had won or lost.
Huh?
Okay.
Trump?
Yeah.
Yeah, why are you talking about Trump?
Where'd you get that?
Yeah, how you into that?
Washington outsider, not taken seriously by the liberal media, successful businessman, unsuccessful in love, electrifying on stage.
Yeah,
that's our guy.
That's Kanye West.
You seen him on stage?
Yeah.
In conclusion, I hope that both the popular vote and the Electoral College deem this episode as canon worthy, even though 2020 is clearly in the Nonak Hall of Fame.
Thank you, Laura. Christina, you chose this from our submissions. Please start us off.
Yeah, I picked this as a semi-established Philadelphian, I suppose, was a part of it. And the other bit was I was interested to see, I think of all things, kind of similar to The Good Fight, Always Sunny has, when it tackles real life and sometimes what feels like too soon things, they usually do it in a way that I'm like, that was clever enough that it's worth it, or it is funny enough, or they have some sort of weird subversive take on it that I'm like, yeah, continue on, guys. Like, this is not just people arguing in masks in, you know, in your Law and Orders or your Grey's Anatomies. Like, I knew they were going to do something a little deeper than that. And I was interested to see what was going to happen. And honestly, this episode is, to me, kind of like what Always Sunny does best. Like, I knew, of course, that their guy was not going to be Trump. It was too, they were hammering the nail on that too hard. I was like, what's going to be the joke? And still the reveal of Kanye, I was like, did what? Like, what is wrong with you guys? And the way that D just keeps hitting incredible on stage. Have you seen him on stage that whole time? Just really tickled my funny bone. I was like, yeah, this is a good ep. And this is kind of what I wanted to see these guys tackle at this moment.
Excellent. Sarah.
I liked parts of this a lot. I thought that that ad was just absolutely, and like you're seeing while the ad is on, like the sort of TikTok framing with, you know, feedback ability, and nothing is happening. Basically, like you see that music is playing, but like no one is responding to it on this social medium. But it's just so like the cheap penny whistle sound effects, and that it's, you know, her in a fake mustache and like bitch muffler. I mean, you know, ha, but also ha, like it, you know, that is a really good dense sequence that they know when to stop and go to something else. Not always true. The McNabb Rocky argument, like I know that this kind of thing is a runner, but it just felt quite self-satisfied. And this is always sort of my issue with It's Always Sunny, is that I think their proportions of like pushing the envelope to satisfaction about that fact are not always in, like not always lined up. A lot of these performers are actively off-putting to me. That's not anyone's fault, but it's just like there is, especially now that we're in, you know, season whatever, like now that we're in double digits, there is a pride and a standing back from some of the jokes, and sort of an indicating that I just don't, it doesn't quite land for me with this show for a variety of reasons that are not necessarily about the show and its quality, but like until we got through the Frank Goodfellas homage section, I was like, this is still somehow taking too long to get to the reveal. So I, you know, I laughed a few times. There were sequences that I thought were really well done. The why don't we hear a song? And the guy's like, no. And they're like, yes, which is exactly what people who want to play their music, like that was spot on. Mm-hmm. There were good aspects of this, but I don't know if I'm going to vote for it because it just seemed a little self-regarding in the way that this show sometimes is and doesn't really understand that sometimes being scabrous is not its own reward for the viewer, but that could just be a taste thing. So good presentation, though. I thought it was an interesting watch at the very least. Tara.
We talked about this show back in August when we were considering the water park episode. And at that time, I think I said, I certainly felt that it was like almost a good episode. And then there was the awful Frank has AIDS storyline where it's like, why are we doing this on top? You know, like, why does it have to be this? Really, like now you're getting into South Park territory in terms of like just being gross for the sake of it, which no thanks. This I thought was, I take all of Sarah's points, but it was really funny to me anyway. Like when they're first all afraid of like, you know, what kind of a person is going to come and meet them, and then it's the most regular, degular white guy. It's Brian Husky playing the PPP loan officer. You know, that was funny. And I thought having the three storylines, you know, sectioned off, to me, they were all the right length. Like, I felt like they were each self-contained in an effective way, like almost like an Adult Swim show-sized storyline. And the way they're all, you know, when the Brian has, when Gary, the PPP guy, just explodes at the end, and then we see the montage of all of their work, like, coming together where they're all, like, Frank is at the press conference in the parking lot. Dee and Charlie are at January 6th in their Kanye shirts being like, oh, no. Then Mac and Dennis at a riot over the counting. Like, that was quick enough where it's like, I don't ever want to laugh at any of this stuff because it is too soon, as Christina said, and it's too stupid and too horrible. And yet for these stupid, horrible characters to be living it, to be like the Zelig of this awful moment, I thought was like, of course. And Christina, I agree. Like, you know, it's not going to be Trump when they keep talking about our guy and not saying his name. And yet when they were like, no, Kanye, was like, it got me. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm stupid, but it, like, the end of it, I really laughed hard and it worked for me. So that's where I landed. Dave.
Yeah, you mentioned South Park. This really did feel like a South Park episode, kind of mixed with the format of like a Treehouse of Terror, you know, with like divided into thirds almost as they go through the various businesses. There were parts I really liked, and there was parts that I was like, it's absolutely not working for me. Like the first business, Punch Incorporated, which is like just the perfect name. Their mission is choking out jabronis, which I thought was just stupid enough. It just made me laugh. Like there's moments like that that always delight me in any episode of this show. But then there's always moments that push me away. And I think that's like what Sarah is saying, where they're just like, let's just be the most of this being in our bonnet. And it doesn't really work comedically sometimes. The Rocky or McNabb thing that just kind of went on and on totally didn't work for me. But the payoff at the end where this episode ends with Dennis looking back at the camera as they're just doing their stupid shtick in front of this riot that's just informed all around them was a nice payoff. I enjoyed the Goodfellas thing. Garments and Varmints are Laura's favorite, my least favorite of them. It just seemed very backwards written, which obviously this whole episode was. You know, like some people like Douglas Adams do it very well. Sometimes this is really forced like this. I mean, nuance is not what the show is known for, but still, like, I felt like it seemed, you could see the seams, it seemed a little lazy to me. So I'm not bagging on the whole episode saying it's bad, but I'm just saying, like, I would really have to pick and choose which moments I would say are good and bad. And on the leisure sheet, it doesn't really work out for canon worthiness. Definitely some great moments and some great comedy timing from this, as you would expect in the 15 seasons of a show where the cast really hasn't changed. But like just the just the reaction to Fouch the Grouch, where he's delighted by it, but he obviously doesn't know why. There is a pregnant pause right after the phrase last tit before the asshole. Which was just like to the millisecond, like perfect.
And the fact that it's Charlie getting offended by it was like a barely functional human being is very funny.
I did enjoy the anger button on Gary's part of it. I'll play that here.
I do not believe you. I do not believe any of you. None of this happened. There is no way that you were all involved in every major event of the past year.
What? Why?
Because they're not Forrest Gump!
So yeah, I enjoyed the episode. I don't really think it's canon worthy. I think there's too many dead spots. There's too many kind of weak moments. And you sort of invite that when you have sort of these buckets. Yeah, see what you did there, Dave. Sort of like same thing with the Treehouse of Terror. You know, if that was up in the canon, you'd be like, well, you got 2 out of 3. Is that still canon worthy? You know, that kind of thing. So let's put this to the official vote. Christina, what do you think about this episode? Should it go in the canon or not?
I liked this episode fine, which I think was also kind of one of my other reasons for picking it. I like the idea of Always Sunny, and every time I watch it, I have a couple laughs, but I'm always like, is there something missing? And I think perhaps there might just be something missing for me personally as the show goes, but I think I'm going to have to say a no canon for me.
All right, Sarah D. Bundick?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I will also say there's a couple things in here that if we pan this gold for tiny canon entries, and it's like, you know, fake local ads that are within sitcoms, that I think that ad could definitely be on a short list for sure. But overall, there is always something missing, and I do like the idea of the show more than I end up liking the show. Long-winded no from me, but thank you for the submission.
Tara?
I sense it's not going to matter. I am going to throw it a vote. That ending really got me. So for that reason alone, they won me over, the show and Laura.
All right. I'm going to vote a no on this one. As with All Sunny in Philadelphia, it's sort of like always kind of a marginal vote one way or the other. But I will say no. So that means that, unfortunately, it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, season 15, episode 1, 2020, a year in review. You're hereby not inducted to the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
We got a couple of big media companies in transition. Showtime getting absorbed by Paramount Plus. Netflix trying to figure out what it is now. And they dropped a couple of shows and they did a little switcheroo. So Showtime had made a limited series about Ripley, as in The Talented Mr. Ripley, starring Andrew Scott. They dropped it. Netflix picked it up. Similarly, Netflix canceled Uncoupled, the bad Neil Patrick Harris show that we talked about last summer. But Showtime went ahead and picked that up instead to make a second season. So congratulations to these two shows that could have been orphaned but aren't.
And loser of the week, Sarah?
That would be America's Next Top Model season one winner and once and future wife, just kidding, ex-wife of Peter Brady, Adrienne Curry, who essentially said on Twitter that Melanie Lynskey's The Last of Us body is too big for the post-apocalypse. And once again, Melanie Lynskey, your hero and mine, like came back out and was like, here was the thinking behind that, and here's how I prepare to act as a character and manage not to take out after Adrienne Curry, who subsequently deleted her Twitter, which is a real shame because we're really going to miss all her insightful comments.
It's a pity.
Mm-hmm. Bye, bitch.
Speaking about insightful comments and perhaps bye, bitch, do you know what time it is?
Gay time.
Gotta be gay time.
All right, this is a new season. How very exciting. As promised, ooh, there is now a steel meal wipe.
Wow, he did it. Woo-hoo. He actually did it.
It's time.
If you had steel meals, you no longer have steel meals. And we will not be using steel meals today, so we don't even have to deal with Eric's meal today. Because we are playing Heavens Above from Mr. Dan Castino.
Damn you, Castino!
He will get an extra credit topic for his troubles. Dan has consulted the stars and planets and has created 24 horoscopes for characters from across television history. He writes, okay, TV shows frequently reveal the birthday of their characters, and while it's often just a throwaway line, that means we can figure out that character's sun sign and cast their horoscope. In this game, I will give you the sign of a character who is an excellent example of their sun sign, the year the show started, and a horoscope built for them.
Okay.
It is your task to give me the character whose horoscope that this is for 2 points, and then the show for another 2 points. So two pieces of information. The character whose horoscope this is, the show they are from, both 2 points.
Okay.
Okay.
If you don't get both pieces of information correct, the leftovers will go to a predetermined contestant who also gets a hint, the actor who played the character.
Oh.
For any questions that you didn't get. If they get it, you lose a point.
Okay.
If they leave anything on the table, it goes to the third person. If they get anything, you both lose a point.
Okay.
So this is going to be a game about a lot of points being lost. It is very important that you get as much as you can right
negative
away.
Nancy.
There are no steel meals. Let's throw the piggy to see our order today.
This is stressful.
Yep.
We will start with Sarah.
Sarah, Christina, Tara is our order. 24 questions, no steel mills, no equalizer challenge zones. Are we ready to play Heavens Above?
Yes, sir.
Maybe. Let's try.
All right. Sarah D. Yeah. Bunting, any leftover questions will be going to Christina first. So, Christina, be ready.
All right. They're ready.
Libra, 1994 is when this show started. Your indecisiveness is going to get in the way of your romantic interests. Decide who you want to be with before the wedding and try to reach out to an interest before they leave for the airport. We want the character involved, they are a Libra, from this show, which started in 94, and the show itself.
Oh my
character
God.
And show.
Leaving for the airport.
Can I hear the horoscope again, please?
Your indecisiveness is going to get in the way of your romantic interests. Decide who you want to be with before the wedding and try to reach out to an interest before they leave for the airport.
Oh, God. I know it's not Benson, and I don't think it's the... is it Felicity of Felicity?
It's not. Okay, so we go to Christina.
Avenge me.
Your hint is David Schwimmer.
Oh, that's not what I thought this was at all.
Oh, no, so it's Ross from Friends.
Ross from Friends. That means Sarah now has negative 2 points.
Oh, no.
Woo!
Get points when it's your turn to answer the question. You lose points if it's passed on.
Got it.
If I had gotten it wrong, would I have also lost points?
If you got it wrong, we would go to Tara. And then okay. If she got anything right, you would lose a point and Sarah would lose a point. Cascading losses.
Wow. Okay.
We may end up with negative points in this game.
Bring golf rules.
It's like a champagne fountain, but of pain.
Perfectly reasonable scoring system.
Okay.
Christina, Leo, 2013. Being loving and affectionate is vitally important as you discover new truths about your family and your role in it. Creating a very close bond with someone close to you will open up a world of possibilities, but don't leave your dad behind. He might be a little embarrassing, but he has a lot to teach you.
2013?
2013.
Oh, God. This is hard, team. Leo... This is also mortifying as a avowed homosexual. I should be much better at astrology than this. This is gonna take some street cred from me, but I got nothing. I got nothing.
All right, this goes to Tara.
Okay.
Your clue is the voice of Zach Coulson. Callison.
Who?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great bad hint.
Oh my God. I mean, my guess before the hint was Sarah Michelle Gellar in The Crazy Ones, but it's definitely not that.
Right, incorrect. Now, Sarah, if you get any part of this, they will both lose points. Do you have any idea what's going on here?
I thought I did. So now I have to guess the cow on Fringe.
All right. So no points to subtract for anybody. Nobody got anything. No points to gain. No points to lose.
Okay.
Okay.
The answer there, both show and character, was Steven Universe.
Oh, okay.
Steven
Universe. Oh.
All right. This is for Tara.
Yep.
Your character is a Gemini. The show is from 2007. Your communication skills will land you advantages in business, but be sure to tell your coworkers how much you value them. A paycheck isn't enough.
Oh, my God. 2007. Is this Rhys Darby in Flight of the Conchords? Definitely not.
It is not. This goes to Sarah. Your clue is Jonathan Hamm.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh. Is this Don Draper in Mad Men?
It is. That means Sarah has just made Tara lose 2 points.
How many points did I get? None?
None.
Okay.
Taurus, 2000. Sarah. You need to repress your stubborn nature, especially when dealing with your parents. If they want to help you, let them, and don't let old grudges get in the way.
2000. Yeah, I got nothing. I got nothing. Roll right, it this, on.
It's this, a show you hate.
This goes to Tara. Your
no. Oh, to me, not to Christina?
Yeah, we flip. We flip each one.
Oh, okay. So okay.
Damn, I knew this one. I got excited.
Lauren Graham is your hint.
Yeah. Oh. It's Lauren Graham in Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, I just told you the hint.
Okay. It's Gilmore Girls?
Oh.
Yeah.
The character is...
Oh, I'm sorry. Lorelai Gilmore.
Yeah, okay. All right. So Sarah just lost 2 points.
Okay.
Christina.
I would like to say that my own personal preference. I'm a Taurus. She's not a Taurus. Lorelai is a Sagittarius. I know it's canon in the show, but it is incorrect.
I would have said she was a Pisces, but okay.
Christina, Libra, 2005. Mm. Your fair nature and tact are going to be put to the test if you're going to mediate between all of the elemental conflicts going on around you. Expect a lot of travel, but watch out for a fire sign who may become an ally.
I mean, it's the elemental that's like, it's like tugging at me, and it's like so close. It feels so close, and yet it feels further than it does close in many ways.
Sarah, you're on deck.
Great stalling, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it.
All
nothing.
Right, going to need an answer. All right. Sarah, your hint is the voice of Zach Tyler Eason. E-I-S-E-N.
Oh, boy. I wish that helped, but it doesn't. Wilson on Home Improvement.
I'm close. Very close. All right, Tara.
I love that energy.
I mean, voice, I don't know. Is it Avatar The Last Airbender?
It is.
Oh.
You know the character.
Duh.
Jeff.
All right. You did get Aang, the lead.
Aang!
But that means you just docked off 1 point to Christina, 1 point off Sarah. All right, loving these negative scores. Back to Tara. Gemini, 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Your multitasking skills are going to get a workout this week at your job. Don't be afraid to rely on your family for help. They can afford it. Just watch out on that trip to Africa.
Oh, no.
Gemini, 1994.
Someone rich in 1994 and a trip to Africa. Oh, fuck. Is this fucking John Carter in ER?
Oh!
That was my first thought.
Is it 4 points to Tara?
I could have gotten that one, too. Oh, well.
That's the show I was thinking when they said 94.
Sarah, Capricorn, 2009. Your optimism and hard work are infectious, but don't get discouraged if you run into coworkers and higher-ups who seem immune to it. Understand the barriers that you're facing at work, but don't let those barriers break down your natural optimism. Remember, the work you're doing is important.
What is the year again?
2009.
Crazy ex-girlfriend? It's too early.
Not... going to Christina, your hint is Amy Poehler.
Oh, Leslie Knope in Parks and Rec.
All right, that is -2 to Sarah. To Christina, for your actual question, Sagittarius, 1993. Your openness and optimism can sometimes look like tactlessness. But don't let social barriers keep you away from a romantic interest. And ignore anyone who says to tone down your laughter. Sagittarius, 1993.
No, I got nothing.
Nothing? All right, this is going to Tara. Your hint is Fran Drescher.
Oh, this is Fran Fine in The Nanny.
All right, that's 2 off Christina's. All right, Tara.
Yes.
Virgo,
okay.
89. Being practical, organized, and efficient was enough to get you through school, but you'll need to learn new skills to succeed at your job. No matter how busy you get, be sure to keep that diary. You'll appreciate it in the future.
Is this Doogie Howser in Doogie Howser MD?
Yes, that is another correct answer for 4 points. This one is for Sarah. We've got Pisces 2006. A new coworker means that you might not get all the attention you feel you deserve, so you have to use all of your considerable talents to get back into the limelight. Make sure to stay close to your superior at work, who will help ground you.
Is this Scrubs?
Not.
It's never Scrubs.
You can take a crack at the character if you want, but you can just pass if you have no idea.
Is it Liz Lemon?
Tara, your hint is Jane Krakowski.
Yes, it's Jenna Maroney from 30 Rock.
Yes, it is. two less for Sarah. Christina, we've got Libra, 2005. Your coworkers are going to put your fair and tactful nature to the test. And while you may find yourself raising an eyebrow to their antics, try to maintain your distance. Don't be afraid to pursue a romantic interest, even if they seem to be taken.
Two of five coworkers. So many coworkers in the mid-aughts.
2005.
Yeah, nothing.
All right, this one goes to Sarah Bunting. Your actor is John Krasinski. Raising an eyebrow.
Is this Jim on The Office?
Yes, Jim Halpert on The Office. Two less for Christina. All right, this will take us into our score break. Aries, 89 for Tara.
Okay.
Embrace your impulsive nature and head out to that family trip to Australia or England or Japan or anywhere else you haven't been yet. Don't worry about your job. It'll be there next week.
Family, major family trips in 1989. I don't know. It's probably some sitcom, but I can't think of it.
All right, this goes to Christina. Your clue is this was voiced by Dan Castellaneta.
Yeah, I'm going to play my youthful card. I got nothing here.
All right, goes to Sarah. This was voiced by Dan Castellaneta.
Homer Simpson on The Simpsons?
Yes, you are correct. Both your foes just lost 2 points. Nice get for Sarah as we head into this very interesting and unique score break. Oh my
God. I don't think the scoring is real.
Okay. I have 4 points. Christina has negative 7 points, and Sarah has negative 9.
All right.
Okay.
Back to Sarah. Aquarius, 2013. Not everyone is going to appreciate the artistry you bring to everyday tasks, but you can expect a new friend who's intrigued by them. You can expect to have lots of dinner parties. The more people you serve, the happier you'll be.
Cute.
Hannibal Lecter and Hannibal.
Yes. Woo! 4 points.
And finally.
4 points. All right. This is Scorpio 1990 for Christina.
Okay.
You won't have any trouble making friends in your new environs, and they'll reward your loyalty. Watch out for a sibling who may fall in with a bad crowd. And beware of gambling, as your stubbornness might mean that you take it too far. Scorpio 1990. Nice. Show started in 90.
No. That's going to be a no for me. Darn.
Right. That was a tragic pass as this goes to Tara.
Yep.
His hint is Jason Priestley.
Oh.
I was waiting for, I don't even remember when his birthday fuck it is. I was waiting for a Capricorn from this show, but that's Brandon Walsh from Beverly Hills 90210.
That is correct. And you just cost Christina another 2 points. For Tara, Sagittarius, 2006.
Sure.
Your need to balance your personal life and work life is going to cause problems because of your honest nature. If you do recognize a conflict, you'll be well served to work it out into your artistic endeavors.
Is this question mark from Project Runway?
I don't know what that is, but it's not.
No, that's not a person. That's just, I couldn't think of anyone.
Sarah D. Bunting, can take some points off Tara with your clue, Miley Cyrus. Character and show. 2006.
Wow. Is it the titular Hannah Montana on Hannah Montana?
It is. Also would have accepted Miley Stewart, apparently. That's her
alter ego,
or her real name.
Her real name, yeah.
So Tara just got 2 points knocked off. This is your full question, Sarah. Capricorn, 1997. You're always dependable and always persevere against whatever big bad the world throws at you. You'll be tested by the flakier nature of some of your friends, but you do need their help. Don't let your set views prevent you from seeking romance with unexpected partners.
That is a very good horoscope.
That is very good. I'm a little surprised she's a Capricorn. Is this Buffy Summers on Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
That is good for 4 points. Yes.
Woo.
All right. Back to Christina. Leo, 2008. Your spouse is keeping a big secret from you. But if they let you in on it, you'll be able to help them take a business opportunity to the next level. Don't be afraid to take a deal if it will help your family. 2008 Leo.
No. It's gonna be a no.
All right, this goes to Sarah D. Bunting. Your clue is Anna Gunn.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had that backwards in my head. That's a Skyler on Breaking Bad, yeah?
Yes. All right, so another two out of Christina Skork. Tara.
Yep.
Cancer, 2007.
Oh, yes. Cancer, heard of it.
Following your heart get you in trouble, but it's the only way to build up a relationship with someone outside of your normal social circle. Ignore all the chatter and rumors and do what feels right. Watch out for a stunning secret from a romantic partner involving a pen name.
This is probably Serena Vanderwoodson from Gossip Girl.
You are correct. Yes.
Ooh.
Blake Lively's character. Such 4 points. Sarah, Gemini, 98. Your wit and communication skills are your strength, but if you want a lasting relationship, you're going to have to move past the superficial. Don't be afraid to rely on a few close friends for advice.
Is this Felicity Porter or Felicity?
It's not. This goes to Christina. Your actor is Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh. Yeah, I thought so. Carrie Bradshaw, Sex and the City.
You are correct. That's two off Sarah's score.
I thought it was someone else. I won't say in case this person's also in the game.
All right, Christina, here is your full question. Capricorn, 1990. The show started in 1990. As a practical realist, you might be inclined to bend the rules in order to get the right outcome, but doing so might lead to legal problems or conflicts with your work partner. You might want to let the people at work in on your personal drama, but you should set aside that impulse and stick to what you're best at.
I want it to be someone from Law & Order, but I don't know who.
Don't forget, you can answer. So, I mean, just to lay out your strategy for you. You can name the show first and then see if it's somebody from there. And if not, you can change tacks or go further down.
So. Is it Lenny Briscoe from Law & Order?
It is.
Oh, my God.
Oh!
4 points. Nicely
Gorgeous.
Done.
Gorgeous.
Incredible.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Sagittarius, 85.
Okay.
Don't let conventional ways of solving problems get in the way of your creativity and inventiveness. If a friend needs help, you'll need every tool at your disposal to get a solution.
Oh, 1985. Is this?
This will pass to Sarah.
Paul Reiser's character from My Two Dads.
It's not. Sarah D. Bunting, your clue is Richard Dean Anderson.
Oh, good.
Do I get any extra points for the manner in which I respond?
You might.
Is it MacGyver from MacGyver?
Correct, yes. Tara loses 2 points. You gain 2 day points.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
All right, let's get the scores. Everybody has one horoscope left.
Okay, sorry, just adding Sarah's day point. All right. Christina has -7. Sarah has -3. I have 4.
All right. Let's get right back into
it. So close to zero.
Sarah D. Bunting. Leo, 1985 again. You're definitely a leader among your close-knit friend group, but you'll have to work to maintain a close relationship with your mother. Watch out for an old flame, but you'll find love with a relative of one of your friends.
Please, please, Picky. Is this Dorothy Spornak from The Golden Girls?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
4 points. Christina, here's your last question. Aquarius, 2006. Okay. People might think you're detached and cold, but you know that there's a side of you that they would be very surprised by. You might be tempted to leave everything behind and take on a new position, but you need to resist the urge.
Take on a new position. Yeah. No.
All right, this goes to Sarah. Your actor is Michael C. Hall.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
2006.
Yeah, right. No, that's just, I was over on like the WB and I just need a minute. Is this Dexter of Dexter?
Yes, it is. Dexter to the Dexter. Two less for Christina here at the end. Tara, last question of regulation. Pisces, 89. Your creativity can take you a long way, but you need to rein in your unrealistic tendencies if you want to get ahead. Friends and neighbors can help you. Don't be afraid to just barge in and ask for help whenever you need it.
Is this Kimmy Gibbler from Full House?
Okay. Not.
That's such a good guess.
Christina, you can subtract some points from Tara with the hint, Michael Richards.
Oh, it's Kramer from Seinfeld.
Kramer from Seinfeld. Two less for Tara. That is regulation. Let's hear these wacky scores.
Okay. Oh. Christina finished with -9. Woo-hoo. Sarah finished with 1. Woo. I barely squeaked out ahead with literally 2.
Nicely done. All right. Thank you, Dan, for that game. Thank you, me, for that very compelling scoring system that I tacked on to it. Today belongs to Dar.
Tara.
Woo. All right, guys. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We discuss whether or not we'd want to be farted upon by Perfect Match before going around the dial. What stops at you, the show, not you personally. We don't have time for all that. Thousands of people listen to the show. Real Housewives, The Good Fight, and In-Betweeners. And Sarah, I'm not going to play that clip right now. I was tempted to.
No, don't.
No one could stop the count for Laura's unsuccessful pitch for It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia's 2020, A Year in Review. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Dan. Next up, it's a logical Sherlock on Extra, Extra Hot Great. And here on EHG Prime, it's The Company You Keep. Remember,
we're listening.
On behalf of Tara Ariano,
get me a bitch muffler.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I like your teeth.
And Christina Tucker.
Still thinking about mimes.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
It's like cute, you know, when like someone's like really hot and like doesn't know a lot. Like that's like charming, you know? So
cheers.
Cheers.
It's troubling to me. I don't like, is that a wet bikini or just sitting in all day?
Yeah.
No.
It's a health issue at a certain point.
That's what my grandmother would tell us when we went to her lake house. She would say, I'm going to get crotch rot.